Hello, Fightful Faithful. Welcome to another episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski, and everything sucks. Well, I mean, it sucks so far. I think we can all see an end, like a light at the end of the tunnel. Where it doesn't suck at the end, but so far, like, God, just the okay. Imagine you're a kid and your dad comes in on like a Saturday morning and says, "Good news, we're going to Disneyland." You're like, "Awesome, this is everything I've ever wanted." And is it bad news? You gotta crawl on your belly through broken glass to get there. I don't want to do that. But at the end, Disneyland. And you're like, yeah, Disneyland. Disneyland's good. Okay, I guess let's go. Does it have to be broken glass? Okay, so for part of the way it'll be broken glass, part of the way it'll be like just like really stinky mud. Like mud you're pretty sure has some poop in it. But you got to crawl on your belly the whole way through. Can we do the... I mean, the broken glass and the stinky and the poopy mud, that's probably going to lead to an infection, right? And your dad says, good point. No broken glass. Just poopy mud the whole way through. I mean, it's 90% mud and like 10% poop. So it's not that bad. But still, you got to crawl on your belly the whole way to get there. But once you get there, Disneyland! Okay, Disneyland. That's this build for Mania. The build is shit. It's 90% mud and 10% shit. But Disneyland! All the matches they're setting up on SmackDown... They look great. These matches are going to be a lot of fun. Good to watch. Good workers in there. Oftentimes, compelling stories are there to be told. Though they're not in many cases. Which is the muddy poop. The poopy mud. And that's the problem. Somewhere along the line, they decided it's Mania. We're just doing it for the spectacle. Nobody really needs long-term build and storyline stuff. So even if there's a match or two or three that has the potential really easily to throw in some long-term storytelling, you know, bits and pieces here and there, we won't. We're just going to do it about some stupid bullshit. Like, it's a match you've always wanted to see at WrestleMania. We're going to throw it together at the last fucking minute over the dumbest shit possible. And if you want, you can put it in your own headcanon that it's actually about everything else. And yes, I'm talking about Sammy versus Kevin Owens. This is one of those. Does the ends justify the means? And I hope the answer at the end of WrestleMania is yes. I hope the matches are so good and the booking is correct. So much so that we forget about the stop-start bullshit, the people, the double pins that at the pay-per-view before WrestleMania, the out of the blue, let's have them be pissed about stupid bullshit to give them a match. Let's one guy's upset that another guy disrespected him in the wrong way. Let's do that for a match. Reginald, maybe, God willing, a year from now, the booking for Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks over the course of 2021 will be so good, we will have forgotten that Reginald ever existed. Because also, in this world, Reginald disappears after a blow-off after Mania. He's just gone. Flitted into the ether. Maybe he returns later with a mask as like a black luchador gimmick. I don't know. But Reginald, the wine clown, just gone. I don't know what that sound effect was. Was he riding a helicopter into the great beyond? I don't know what that was. It's been a long week. So here's what we're gonna do tonight. We're gonna do talk about some of the SmackDown shit from Fastlane, but that was so long ago. Who cares? But we're actually gonna talk about a lot of it because they just did fucking rematches from Fastlane on SmackDown. A couple of them. Then we're going to talk about terrible builds, and we're going to talk about the fact that it takes SmackDown apparently 2 hours to think of, oh, how about a triple threat, when we thought that immediately. And then after we do all the SmackDown thing, we're going to get unnecessarily angry about the WWE Cox top 50 ladies gimmick, because I really wasn't paying attention to that as it was going on, as they were revealing things one by one. And then after the whole thing was revealed, I saw the whole list and I got angry. So, hey, we're looking at that for, that's where we're going to close the show out with. Okay, so at Fastlane, the thing we thought would happen happened. And Edge was at ringside to be the special enforcer for the Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns match, which was a good match, and then Daniel Bryan has terrible aim. Like, he was supposed to, hit a big knee on Roman, but missed Roman by several dozen feet, and caused the ref bump. So Edge slid into the ring and was the ref. And then when he slid into the ring and became the ref, Corey Graves said, or Michael Cole, one of the two idiots who does commentary for SmackDown, says, well, that's what he's out here for. Is that what he's out here for? The special enforcer's job is understudy referee? Is that real? I didn't know that was the case. Understudy referee. If for whatever reason the referee cannot discharge his duties, and if you're unable to discharge your duties, you need laxatives, the official laxatives of Sour Graps. The official beverage of Sour Graps is lemonade. Please do not combine the two official things of Sour Graps. I'm pretty sure, I don't know if that's the truth, but it seems to me like if you like were to wash down a whole bunch of laxatives with a whole bunch of lemonade, it would be really bad. It just seems that way to me. Anyway, what was I saying? If the ref can't perform his duties, then the special enforcer becomes the referee. Is not a thing that I thought was the case. And then he is the ref for a while until Daniel Bryan, doesn't Daniel Bryan hit him with a chair? Like he's trying to hit Roman, but he hits Edge. Right? But he misses again. He misses Roman by several feet to hit Edge with a chair. And then Edge gets pissed and he hits Daniel Bryan with a chair and Roman with the chair and leaves them both laying. And then as he's leaving, starting to go insane, he goes more insane as the week goes on. He gets more and more crazy. As he's leaving, a third referee, I'm counting Edge as the second referee, even though I'm pretty sure that's not how special enforcers work. But another referee slides into the ring just enough time to count Roman out. To count Roman, 1, 2, 3, Roman counts the pinfall on Daniel Bryan. It should be noted earlier in the match, Edge wasn't there for this. I forget. It's been a week, guys. It's been a long week. Nobody was there to see Roman gently tapping out to, this is the sound of Edge of Roman tapping out. That's the sound of Roman tapping out. Nobody was there to see Roman tap out to Daniel Bryan's yes lock. By the way, Daniel Bryan wrestled the goddamn match of his life. It was so good. He told all the stories he needed to tell. He was in peril for all the time, but he was never not in control. It was great. And Roman kicked ass. It was a very good match. But my question for the third referee, again, provided that Edge was truly the second referee, where the hell were you this whole time? Like, why didn't you run down to the ring after the first ref got bumped and be like, Edge, it's cool. I got the zebra stripes. I'll handle it from here. And Edge being like, oh, sorry, thank you. I'll just sit on the outside because there's no reason for me to be here unless I get involved. And of course he does. And then that's what happens with that. So we start SmackDown last night with with Daniel Bryan coming out in ring gear and a t-shirt. He wants to wrestle. He wants to have another championship match versus Roman Reigns. He wants what he wants, and he's not going to leave without it. He's brought a chair with him, so he can sit down in the chair. And he says he's sick and tired of playing second fiddle and putting myself behind and all this stuff. Nobody's ever gonna take what I'm owed. I deserve it. I deserve me is a great way of making Daniel Bryan seem like a dick. Because he actually says, I earned my spot. I earned the title. I made Roman tap. I earned a WrestleMania main event. What did Edge ever do? Is basically what he says. And it's like, Edge won the Royal Rumble? So he technically, not only did he earn it, but like he came in at number one and outlasted literally 29 other men. I know they say a lot of times, I outlasted 29 other men. Dude, you came in at 23, okay? So take it down a notch. Edge actually came in at number one and actually outlasted 29 other guys, won the Royal Rumble, so he gets to choose who he's facing at Mania. Daniel Bryan seems to think that he should have the match instead of Edge, or maybe, like, he should be champion, and it should be Edge versus him. So then he's sitting out there, and Adam Pearce comes out, and he's just... We go to a commercial with him sitting in the chair, right? And then he come back, and he's still sitting in the chair, and Edge comes out. Adam Pearce comes out. Says, Daniel, you know I can't give you a title match. And blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, here's what we're going to do. Don't give me time much today. Then how about you have Edge versus Roman And immediately after that, the winner of that match faces me. Like, you know, more than anybody, Daniel Bryan, it's not fair to have a guy go for one title match and then immediately go for another one. That would put them in an extreme disadvantage, just as you were at Elimination Chamber. And I wanted Daniel Bryan to be like, aha, aha. Yeah, obviously. Yes, that's true. That's the first way I was screwed out of this. And then he's like, well, how about this? How about it's Daniel Bryan, it was Roman Reigns versus Edge on night one of Mania, and the winner of Edge versus Roman Reigns on night two faces me. And Adam Pearce is like, come on, Daniel. And then Edge comes out and he, like, this is a funny thing that he does. It's very funny. He comes out and he swipes the microphone. He's like trying to steal the ball in basketball. He just knocks it out of his hands. Fast break going the other way. 2 points. He knocks the microphone out of Adam Pearce's hands. And he walks all the way down to the ring and he gets into the ring and he walks past Daniel Bryan and he walks over to the end to the ring ropes and he yells at somebody, give me a microphone. Well, you could have just taken the one that you knocked out of Adam Pearce's hands. You could have just taken that one. You know, you could have used that, Edge. And then Edge is like, you had your shot. You lost to Roman Reigns twice. And the first time, Edge, can I call you Edge? The first time that I lost, I'm assuming you're talking about Elimination Chamber. Was immediately after I won the chamber, I had to face him like 2 seconds later. And I feel like there's a caveat there, you know, just a bit. Special circumstances might dictate the outcome. And the second time I lost to him, I actually won. I actually tapped him out. But you weren't there to see it, being as how you're the special guest referee, understudy, enforcer. And then I seem to remember you hitting me with a chair and just leaving, which allowed Roman to pin me, my unconscious body. So yes, I did lose to him twice, but like I didn't though. So what Brian seemed to be saying is, I deserve this match. Me, mine, not Edge. And Edge is like, you already lost twice. And both of those things are not true and make both guys eminently unrootable. You got to keep Daniel Bryan on the rootable scale if you are doing the thing with Edge that you are doing. Because, and he says, what does Edge say specifically? He says something, them's fighting words with Edge. He says, you want to pick the bones of the winner or whatever. Brian and Edge, like blah, blah, blah. He could be your, this will be your final WrestleMania, but any bench could be my last for Edge. You don't deserve your title shot, you son of a bitch. So Brian tackles Edge, he lays in the worst little baby punches. It does not look good at all. And Edge pushes him off and then hits a spear from, like, he took one step and hit a spear, and Daniel Bryan reacted as if he had died. He was slowly dying. You've opened my, the back of my head hit the ring with such force that I am now dying, is what Daniel Bryan sold this really terrible little baby spear. Then Edge picks up the chair and thinks about it for a long ass time. And then he like raises the chair so dramatically over his head and holds it there for such a long time that I was sure we were going to get a Roman Reigns music or somebody else's music or the people to run down and stop this. Nope. He just hits like just all of that chair, like all over Brian's tricep, because Brian's laying on his side. And then he drops it. And there's this crazy thing where he like runs his hands through his hair. It looks crazy. Do you ever want to go crazy? This is how you do it when you run your hands through your hair. You go crazy. I mean, that's how you do it. I don't know if you've ever gone crazy. But that's how you do it. I myself do not have hair. Well, I haven't shaved my head in a while, so it doesn't look good. I'm not taking the hat off. Don't ask me. So Edge is fully fucking lost it. And we'll get more of how he's lost it later. So Roman sitting in his private dressing room, and he says, tells Heyman, go get Adam Pearce. And Heyman says, sure. And he says, hey, Jay, go with him. Use force if necessary. Are you sure? What are you going to do? Fire us? No, apparently not. So Shinsuke Nakamura versus Seth Rollins is an unnecessary fast lane rematch. They had one of these. Didn't they have one of these on Raw? I'm not a big proponent of unnecessary rematches the week after the pay-per-view, no matter how good the matches were. Rollins and Nakamura, great match at Fastlane. Pretty good match. This one on SmackDown, also pretty good match. Same exact fucking finish. Seth Rollins wins with the stomp. There's some different stuff that led up to it, but Seth Rollins wins with the stomp. So we got Shinsuke Nakamura. Remember that time where everybody told me that because Shinsuke Nakamura looked really good in that gauntlet match, that Shinsuke Nakamura was getting pushed to the top? He's going to be Intercontinental Champion at some point, or maybe even get a Universal title match with Roman Reigns, and maybe even win. Wouldn't that be great in your alternate reality? It sure would. Shinsuke Nakamura turned heel to face and is at the exact same spot on the card. That's not good. He's just upper mid-card guy who takes pins to further the person he's working with. It's a good match. Both of the matches between Rollins and Nakamura are good matches. This is why I'm worried about, you know, like Disneyland. Like, yay, Disneyland, but also all the muddy poop. Like, if you get to Disneyland and you're covered in muddy poop, you'd be smelling that all day. Like, it'd be really hard to, like, for a second when you're, like, you know, riding the teacups or Splash Mountain or whatever, right? You're happy for that second, and then you're like, oh yeah, I'm covered in muddy poop. How did that happen? Oh yeah, the terrible route we had to take to get here. Well, I mean, I'm having fun, but remember all the muddy poop? You'll never forget the muddy poop. That's a problem. Perhaps your dad shouldn't have told you you had to crawl on your belly through muddy poop. What was that broken glass thing? That was weird. Why did he want to do that? The muddy poop's actually much better than broken glass, but still, like, it's your dad. So, after the match, Rollins are going to do another stomp. And so Cesaro runs out and tries to get a brawl going with Rollins, but Rollins is able to get away from the swing. So we're going to get Cesaro versus Seth Rollins. This was evident to anybody with a brain 3 weeks ago, because Everybody else left, just left, right? When Seth Rollins was doing his big comeback speech, they left. And that's fine, but Cesaro left in the wrong way. And so Seth took offense to that. And then then Cesaro swung him too many times, and Seth took offense to that. And then Cesaro took offense to Seth winning matches versus Shinsuke Nakamura twice. So now they have to have a match. The match itself is going to be great. Cesaro versus Seth Rollins should be a great match. We are covered in muddy poop watching a Cesaro versus Seth Rollins match. That match has got to be really great. I'm saying there's a very, very good chance it's going to be really, really, really great. Is it going to be great enough to make you forget about the muddy poop? I mean, for some people, it will. For some people, they don't really mind the muddy poop. It's only 10% poop. It's 90% mud. You get muddy all the time, kids. Kids play in mud. It's a thing. It's only 10% poop. I'm like, yeah, but that's a good percentage. One out of every 10 particles of the mud is poop. I'm getting really bogged down on this metaphor. I'm going to continue to do it because I think it's fine. Adam Pearce comes into Roman Reigns' locker room. Reigns is like, I just want you to understand. You get me for one night. I'm not doing this. I beat Edge on night one, and then I beat Daniel Bryan on night two. We're not doing that. That's not a thing we're going to do. Okay? So there's absolutely no way that I'm going to wrestle both of them because such a scenario does not exist. Good day, sir. Another point when anybody could have brought up, hey, I mean, I'm not saying we want to do this, but triple threat? it does seem like they're taking the long way around to get to the thing we all think they're going to do. Like, as soon as they started, like, really heavily involving Daniel Bryan in this storyline, we're like, oh, triple threat. And they're like, not only did it take 2 full hours to get there once the obvious thing was announced, but they also have taken weeks now to get to it. So it's just a weird deal. Again, the match is going to be great, but in this case, also we kind of like go, well, I think we all know what's going to happen. This is the other thing. So, Pierce says, I hear what you're saying, Roman. And frankly, I'm almost inclined to agree with you, but I have a lot of things to consider. I will have a decision by the end of the night. And he leaves. So at Fastlane, the match actually got started. The Big E versus Apollo Crews match actually got started. I would have bet actual money that it would not have gotten started. Why? Because why do an actual match at Fastlane? You're going to do the match again at WrestleMania. You know you are. So doing the match at Fastlane doesn't make a lot of sense. We're just going to get tired of watching them fight each other if we aren't already, considering they've had several matches against each other already. So maybe don't do the match. Maybe don't even book the match at all. But if you're going to book the match, then do the weird thing where, like, before the bell rings, they start fighting each other outside the ring, and then the whole match is called off. Maybe you do that. I don't know. Maybe. Well, they didn't do that. But what they did do was worse. The match at Fastlane started out really interestingly. Like, Big E just really trying to torture Apollo Crews and trash talking everywhere. And then Apollo Crews hulking up, getting three big German suplexes on him, and really taking advantage of Big E's rage. There's one point where, like, he goes for his toss power bomb, and Big E goes for the big ending, and then Apollo goes for a small package, and Big E reverses it, and Apollo reverses it, and then Big E reverses it, and at one point there's a 1-2 counted by the ref, and then a reset of the count, and then a 1-2-3, and I'm not sure. It looked like a double pin that was, like, done poorly. And at the end of the match, immediately Apollo beats the hell out of Big E. Like, Apollo was in control of the match when Big E reversed the small package. Visually, it looked like a double pin. And, like, is that what you were trying to go for? But, like, the ref and, like, a double pin is stupid, but it's a way to continue the feud onto WrestleMania. You know, a double pin, well, they've already done that once, right? A draw or whatever, right? And that was kind of like what led to this whole feud to begin with. Doing it again would be fucking stupid. But it would also continue the feud to WrestleMania, which you need. But instead of that, they counted the three, which means Big E wins. So then why does Apollo Crews get another title shot? I mean, he beats up Big E after the match, but, like, you lost again, Apollo. You don't get any more title shots. Well, here we are to figure that part out. It's Big E and the Street Profits versus Apollo Crews and Otis and Chad Gable. And in this match, at one point in the match, there's an amazing spot where Montez Ford is on the apron and Gable is on the inside. And Montez Ford, like, launches himself, like, you know, the thing where you grab onto the, it's not a springboard, because I think a springboard implies that you jump up and put your feet on the ring ropes. He just launched himself with his hands over the ring ropes, and Gable caught him and backbridged into a Northern Light suplex. Like, it was the most, it was fucking water. That's how fluid it was. Jesus, it was beautiful. And Chad Gable is one of the most just talented, brilliant technical wrestlers, professional wrestlers in the world. And I hope that he lets his contract run out and leaves. Everybody should. Nobody should sign a contract extension with WWE. It's like Roman Reigns, I guess, should. It's a terrible place to work. Anyway, I should mention, I don't know why, Rollins is yelling about Cesaro backstage, and he wants a match with Cesaro at WrestleMania. So Cesaro attacks Rollins and does the swing as well. And then he drops Rollins and accepts the challenge. So we're getting the Mania match. How do we get the Mania match or whatever? So Apollo Crews is able to get the pinfall on Big E. At one point in the match, also, there's another thing. Do you remember how the Authors of Pain had that double team move that finished guys? What do they call that thing? Last chapter. It was a Russian leg sweep assisted by a clothesline. And it was like, they did a lot of fucking high impact double team moves that looked a lot more impressive than that thing. But that was how they ended all their matches. Well, It's the same basic idea, but this time it's an Otis discus clothesline, which adds force to a Chad Gable German suplex. It's like the last chapter, but like Pokemon evolved. They did that. Didn't lead to a pinfall or anything. There's a really cool finish to the match. Big spots. Cruz hits an angle slam on Big E and gets the pin. So they're acting like even before that pinfall, that the Mania match between Big E and Cruz is already set. But like, why? They don't even mention like the terrible like pseudo double pin that wasn't at Fastlane. That never even gets brought up. Like it's the build. Oh, Jesus. I wanted to see the rest of that match at Fastlane before that stupid thing they dreamed up for the finish. Like Apollo taking all of Big E's like big torturous running splashes and stuff on the apron. And then Apollo saying, okay, that hurt. Now I'm going to hurt you back. That was compelling as hell. But now they can't do that beginning of the match again at Mania. And I think that would have been a lot of fun to watch that match at Mania. But instead they did that match for 4 minutes. And then they had that stupid fucking terrible suplex, small package reversal shit. And now, like, the match that is going to happen at Mania between the two of them is going to be great. But again, we had to crawl on our bellies through muddy poop to get there. It's like, yay, Disneyland, but also muddy poop. Why do all the things have to be gotten to via muddy poop? Can't we just take the car, Dad? Builds character. So, why does the champ being pinned, like, have to lead? Do you guys not know any other ways of building matches? You have this. I guess there's this way. Forgive me, I'm going to get into a little bit of revisionist fantasy booking with this shit. Not this shit. This shit is Adam Pearce and Edge having a little scenelet. Edge is like, is Daniel Bryan going to get what he wants? Like, what kind of ship are you running around here? Pearce is like, I gotta weigh all the options and, you know, whatever. I gotta do the right thing. Like Daniel Bryan is inserting himself everywhere. He did it at Mania 30. He made it at Mania 30, right? 34? Whatever it was. 34, right? 34. No, 30. 30. Mania 30. The one in New Orleans. His big, the Daniel Bryan Mania. He did it at Mania 30. He's doing it again. He's just inserting himself where it doesn't belong. So Edge really taking the full-on heel route, like disparaging Daniel Bryan's Mania 30 moment. I'm going to do this for WWE. I'm not doing it for any one person. My responsibilities lie with WWE. I'm going to make the right decision. And Edge's like, I hope you do, or else. I'm like, I don't know. That's because, spoiler alert, Adam Pearce makes the wrong decision according to Edge. So now I really am worried about Adam Pearce. Now I'm going to get into some revisionist fantasy booking with this Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens story. Kevin Owens is hosting the KO show with special guest Sami Zayn. And he just, I just want, I need you to have the answer to my question, says Kevin Owens. He says, I tried to show Sammy that while I don't believe in his conspiracy, I'm still on his side. But then he attacked me with the Huluva kick last week. So I only have a question. Only one person answered that question. So here comes Sammy. And Sammy says, yes, I understand. Of course, you are asking me to apologize. And yes, I am unequivocally sorry for kicking you across the line. But all this conspiracy stuff has really been messing with my mind, man. Yes, I am very sorry. Well, that's not the answer I was looking for. It's not my question. Okay, well, now I understand. The question is, can you still be a part of my documentary? Of course you can. There's a red carpet premiere next week on SmackDown, so don't miss it. Set your DVRs. It's going to be a huge red carpet affair. Owens is trying to stalk him, but Sammy won't shut up. Well, you know, I've been going back and forth on social media with Logan Paul. Well, Logan Paul's going to come to the premiere and be a part of the documentary. Look how many YouTube subscribers he's got. What a huge deal he is. I don't care about your project, says Owens. I don't care about Logan Paul. I don't care about your apology. And so Sammy's like, you don't care, you don't care, you don't care. Sami Zayn's doing some fantastic character work here as the guy who's literally fucking losing his mind. I was like, you know what? Shut your mouth and listen. The only question, I'm only allowing you to stand here for this long, is because without beating you, the only reason I let you stand here for this long without beating you senseless is because you're the only person who can answer this question. The question is, you versus me, one-on-one at WrestleMania. Yes or no? And Sammy rants, you make a huge mistake. You're worse than, yes or no? Yes or no? Yes, or, yes, okay, yes. You happy now? Now that I have my answer, there's no reason I have to not beat you senseless. So he beats him up. Clothesline on the floor, stunner in the middle of the ring. Owens leaves and Sammy's beaten down to the ring. So before I shit all over this, there's something that that we should mention. This is from the wonderful Sammy and Kevin Owens centric wrestling account on Twitter called at MythGifs. That's MITH GIFs. Great account. Totally recommend you following them. Their thing is Sammy and Kevin and their history. That's a major deal, what their fandom for wrestling is. So, the number of one-on-one Mania matches that Christian and Edge had, 0. The number of one-on-one Mania matches members of The Shield had against each other, 0. Number of one-on-one Mania matches that Orton and Cena had, 0. The number of one-on-one Mania matches that Triple H and HBK had, 0. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn get a one-on-one WrestleMania match. A lot of the biggest rivalries, frenemy type rivalries, never got a one-on-one WrestleMania match. Sammy and Kevin do. And that's great. And they deserve it. And could it not possibly be for a reason that we care about? Like, they've done so much hard work debunking all of Sammy's bullshit over and over and over again, that as good as he is performing the role, he still seems like a fucking crackpot loon. And Kevin Owens being like the guy who tried and tried and tried and tried to beat Roman Reigns, but couldn't do it. And the consolation prize for him is he gets to beat the hell out of Sami Zayn at WrestleMania. Okay. It's all about how Kevin doesn't believe in Sammy's bullshit conspiracy theories and said so to his face. So Sammy flipped out and kicked him. And for that, they get a WrestleMania match one-on-one. Not for the fucking decades of horrible shit that Kevin Owens did to Sami Zayn. Like they had amazing feuds on the main roster in WWE that didn't resolve in like one-on-one Mania matches. Like they had a Payback 1 year and then one at like, was it Battleground or SummerSlam? They had really great matches years ago. They've been friends when they were both heel for a while, and then Sammy's been heel. It feels like Sammy's been heel for longer than he was a face on the main roster, which is crazy considering how easily that guy gets himself over as a babyface. And Kevin Owens, this is an awesome opportunity to tell this story at a time when I think millions, maybe not millions, hopefully not millions, but definitely hundreds of thousands of Americans could really use something like this, I think, to find a cathartic meaning in it. There are a lot of conspiracy theorist fucking nut jobs in this country, in America right now. Probably globally, but definitely in America. And in a lot of cases, they have friends and family members who do not recognize them anymore. And they're trying to understand, to take their side even, but it becomes harder and harder and harder to do so when in the face of such overwhelming evidence, they still refuse to see what's right in front of them. In some cases, the stuff that they believe is very toxic and even leads to violence. And no matter what their family or friends try to do, they're not able to come around. So what if they had told this story where Kevin approaches Sammy from the beginning and says, man, what are you talking about with this conspiracy stuff? You know, I love you, man. You and I, we go way back, and I know I've done some horrible things to you in the past, but we're brothers. We're always going to be brothers. And I can't stand seeing what this is doing to you. And Sammy says, if you're my brother, you'll here, take this footage from the By documentary and watch it. It proves what I've been saying. And Kevin comes back to him after like watching the footage and be like, Sammy, I love you, buddy. This doesn't prove anything. I don't understand what you're talking about. I need you to come home now, man. I need you to snap out of it. I need you to understand, like, this is what you're talking about. It's nonsense, man. I need you to be the old Sammy. I need you to be my guy. I need you to, if you do this so it coincides, kind of, so it dovetails with some of the stuff he was doing with Roman Reigns, you can say, Sammy, like Kevin is, Sammy, I need you to help me out, to be in my corner. Because Roman is out there with Jey Uso, and he won't stop getting in the way. So I need somebody. Sammy, I burned a lot of bridges in my time here. How compelling would it be if Kevin Owens was at the end of his rope with the Roman Reigns stuff and Jey Uso always getting involved. And Kevin Owens goes to Sami Zayn and says, I need you to be the old Sammy. I need you to be my brother. You're the only one of these assholes that I trust. Can you be there for me, Sammy? And Sammy says, sure, absolutely. But I need you to be on my side too. And Kevin's like, I am on your side, dude. I understand. I do. I understand you feel persecuted. I get it. Believe me, I've been there with WWE management before, okay? But do this for me. Be in my corner. And then Sammy screws him over. Sammy screws over Kevin Owens. And it's the last straw for Kevin. It's the last straw for Sammy. Because Sammy is doing it not to screw over Kevin Owens, but he's doing it because Kevin Owens just doesn't see the big picture, man. And you build over the literally the course of months a storyline of Kevin trying to get Sammy to just let it go, man. Just let it go and just be a real person again, dude. And Sammy taking offense to that. I think the whole thing works better if Sammy challenges Kevin to the match at WrestleMania. This match should be a way to show Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn coming to blows. And by the end of it, like, I don't know how Kevin beats some sense into Sami Zayn, but the end of this match at WrestleMania needs to be Sami Zayn seeing the light, coming back to Earth, and not being this character anymore. And it needs to be through the mercy, the largesse of Kevin Owens deciding not to throw Sami Zayn off of something tall or something, not to hit him with a sledgehammer or whatever. And it shouldn't be like, you know, Kevin Owens drops the sledgehammer and then Sami Zayn hits him in the balls anyway. It shouldn't be that. It should be real. It should be. These should be these two guys literally coming. The end of the match should them hugging. I think that would. I mean, it might be kind of trite, but I think that there are a lot of people in America that could really use some vision of that right now. I think. What the fuck do I know? It's awesome that Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens have a one-on-one WrestleMania match. Of all the reasons for them to have it. This is just seems like it was thrown together in the last 2 weeks for no fucking reason other than, hey, we got two fucking cards to fill. Sammy, Kevin, you want to have a match? Yeah, sure. Okay, figure out a way to do it in 2 weeks. And they did it. So we kind of got the Sasha Banks heel turn kind of at Fastlane that we were all saying we needed to get. Otherwise, what the hell are we doing here? And as far as I can recall, like, Reginald didn't really factor into anything. Why have we been doing this thing with Reginald this whole fucking time? If it wasn't to, like, make him the focal point of the Sasha Banks turn, I don't understand. But the reason why is because right? It's like Sasha was pinning Shayna or had her in the bank statement. And Bianca got into the ring between the finish between Sasha and Shayna and the corner, and Nia just bulldozed Bianca onto Sasha. So then Sasha slapped Bianca after the match. I forget who took the pin or whatever the fuck. Who cares, right? I don't fucking... Who fucking cares? So she slapped Bianca. Bianca was much more shocked about it than anybody else was. So Bianca says that she learned from her mother to be the bigger person. And I could have reacted to it, but then Sasha wouldn't even made it to WrestleMania. So she got some unfinished business with Natalya now. Keep the little kids out of the room because they shouldn't see what I'm about to do to Natalya. And Natalya's and Bianca Belair is a match that happens. Tamina is at ringside. Sasha Banks interrupts, like she comes down the ramp to distract Bianca before the first commercial break. So Tamina gets involved, kicks Belair while she's on the apron, and then Sasha Banks is like, "Oh, poor baby." And then we come back from this commercial, and Sasha Banks, this is all at SmackDown last night, right? Right? Yes. And Sasha is on commentary doing her thing. It's all about me. And Belair eventually wins. She slaps Sasha during the match. And then she hits KOD on Natalya. She gets the pin. Was the attack last Friday by Natalya and Tamina? Was that all to set up this match? That's a stupid thing, then. If that's what you did, that's really stupid. Really stupid. Like, there's no build that is like that. Like, most of the builds to get to Disneyland Mania have been 90% mud and 10% poop. This build for Sasha and Bianca, considering how great the match could be, how important the match is. Two black women facing each other in the main event of one of the Nights of Mania. My God, how important that is for wrestling society and the build they've chosen to put. It's not 90% mud and 10% poop. That's 100% poop. Just a river of shit that you've got to slip and slide down on your face to get to WrestleMania, to get to Disneyland. And let me tell you, Sasha and Bianca have the potential to put together a match that will make you forget about shitty slip and slide. They really do. I hope they're given the right time and the right booking to do it. So right after the match, Bianca runs in, hits a backstabber on Belair. So she gets to stand tall, I guess. Pretty cool scene where Edge walks into the locker room with Roman Reigns. He's like, Reigns is like, "It took a lot of balls for you to come in here. I almost respect it." Edge is like, I'm here to talk. That's it. Dan O'Brien is trying to steal our spotlight. So, if you got the stroke you say you got, now's the time to use it. If he gets into this match, I don't have to beat you. I could just beat him. So, you think it over. Dolph Ziggler versus Rey Mysterio in a one-on-one match with Dominic at ringside and Robert Roode there as well. Jesus Christ, I cannot tell you all of the ways I can't begin to give a 90% mud and 10% shit about this. Except for one thing. Roode and Dominic have a thing at the on the floor, right? And Ray's going to springboard over the top rope, over the ropes to the outside. And as he jumps up for, as he jumps up to do that, he gets caught by Ziggler running in to hit a zigzag. It's one of the filthiest fucking zigzags I've ever seen. And Ray kicks out of it. And fuck you. Fuck you. No. Sorry. No, if you're going to do that move, that's the finish. That's the finish. Or at least like have Ray get pulled out of the ring or somebody breaks it up. Like if you do that exact sequence, the way you did it, that's the finish. You don't get to do that as a fucking transitional move. The zigzag's dead if you do one like that and it doesn't pin Rey Mysterio. Considering also, right after that, he hits a 619 on Ziggler, and then he does with a stupid little splash. Not a frog splash, not a 450, just a splash, just a straight up over the ropes, plop, and 1, 2, 3. And like this, like, fuck that. If you've seen that spot, you know what I'm talking about. That Ziggler zigzag on Ray was filthy. There's no way you kick out of that. You can't. You devalue all of wrestling when you do a move like that and the guy kicks out of it. Like that, it was the most egregious near fall in the history of NXT is half as egregious as that shit. Kicking out of that in a meaningless, stupid fucking, oh my God, oh, one half of the tag challengers just pinned one half of the tag champions. What does this mean? God, I hate that shit so much. Are we getting our four corners match at Mania or not? Like, Otis and Gable looked really impressive. The Street Profits are there. If it's just Dominic and Ray versus Ziggler and Roode, count me the fuck out, man. I don't give a shit. At least to get the other two good teams involved. Yeah, I said it. I don't give a shit about Ziggler and Roode. I never will. I don't care if they're old pros. Fuck it. I don't care how good that one zigzag from Ziggler was that I just put over like crazy. I'll never care about them as a team. And I've said it, and this is it, me saying it now. I don't like Dominic. He is a goddamn mannequin that somebody cast a magic spell on. And you can walk. You're alive. You can walk. And here, we're going to teach you how to do 17 wrestling moves. And 13 of them you can do pretty well. And that's it. Oh, don't worry. No, you can't talk. And you can't have real emotions. He's like Pinocchio came halfway to life and then took like 3 months of wrestling school. That's what Dominic is. At some point, Ray, you're going to have to teach your kid charisma because he doesn't have it. They do a fucking inset promo where Ray talks about how much it would mean to him to win the tag team titles with his son. It would mean so much to me as a wrestler, as a WWE superstar, but it would mean even more to me as a father. He talks for a fucking minute and his son never even opens his mouth. Like, how badly are you trying to hide the fact that he can't talk if he doesn't have a chance to say, like, it would mean as much to me as a son? Like, it's right there. It's like, what is that, 6-7 words? Jesus, he's not ready, guys. Here's the deal. I reserve the right to say in 4 years that he's one of the best in the world, because he might be. But right now, who knew? Okay. So, Great Khali and Kane are in the Hall of Fame. I don't know what you want me to say about that. Kane was pretty fucking great for like 4 years in the late 90s, early 2000s. He was pretty fucking great. I can't believe that he turned that gimmick, which was probably like a 6-month thing, under a mask. Like, he could have come back as anybody after that. He already they repackaged Dr. Isaac Yankum as Fake Diesel, and then repackaged Fake Diesel as Kane, as Undertaker's long-lost brother who was horribly burned in a fire over 90% of his body. They built that shit for a 6-month run. And then that was supposed to be it. I'm pretty sure. But because you can have that character go away. The thing is, like, you can't do anything with the character. He's horribly burned over all of his body. So that's why he's in the full fucking bodysuit with one arm hanging out. They knew that they couldn't do anything with him. So that's why they built the character like that. And yet, Kane made it work, which is crazy for a dude who, like, wound up having fucking brain worms. Good for him, and good for the Great Khali. Let us never forget the time that he came in to save Jinder Mahal's ass in a Punjabi prison match with Randy Orton by climbing up two rungs of the Punjabi prison match and leisurely half-choking Randy Orton through the bars. And then after the match was over, he held the title over his head at the top of the ramp. Let us never forget that. That should be indelibly printed on all of our minds. Great Khali, WWE Hall of Famer. But not Christian, though. Not Christian. Nope. Khali, yes. Christian, no. Not anymore, certainly, but like from before, I mean. So Roman comes out first. Adam Pearce makes his way first, and then Roman and his entourage, and people are chanting, "You tapped out." That is a piped-in chant. They might have chanted that on their own, probably, I would guess. But that is, remember, every chant is a piped-in chant. I do not know what Vince is going to do when the crowd doesn't agree with his own pushes anymore. Like at Mania, if the booking is bad, those fucking people will let him know. So then Edge comes out. And then Daniel Bryan comes out. And Pierce says, "Thanks everybody for coming out. I understand all of your concerns, and they all make sense." Well, Daniel Bryan is making sense about there being a double standard. How he deserves a title shot. Okay. Reigns also right that he will defend the title one time at WrestleMania. So that means that it will be... I don't know. Gosh, geez, there seems to be only one logical thing, but I can't believe it. This is just going to be so crazy. Oh, geez. Bryan versus Edge versus Reigns and Triple Threat, as we all figured it would be, weeks ago. Thanks for getting around. Welcome to the party, pal! We get you. So the yes chants start. Bryan is happy. Reigns starts to question Pierce. Then Bryan attacks Edge. So then there's a huge goddamn brawl with Uso getting involved too. Eventually, Edge is on top after hitting spears and hitting a chair and blah, blah, blah. Edge hits Uso with a spear. He gets chair shots to both Bryan and Reigns when they're down. Edge has fucking lost it. He has lost it. He brings another chair in the ring and another one. Stop and beats Uso down with the chair. Edge has set up basically both Reigns and Bryan for one-man concertos. And Uso intervening allows Reigns to roll out of the ring before he gets one. And Edge is like, fine, I'll just do it to Bryan. And then WWE officials come in. Pat Buck and JB Noble each take a chair shot to the upper arm. And Bryan is able to crawl away. So Edge is he unfolds his chair and sits in the middle of the ring and just does crazy eyes at the hard cam. Edge has been broken by this, and I totally get it. I totally get it. It's a shame that that this is the way they felt they had to do it, with Edge fully turning not just heel but fucking psycho heel before Mania, because he deserved that pop, that true babyface. We are rooting for you, Edge. After 11 years, we are rooting for you with all of our hearts to beat Roman Reigns uber heel. We are rooting for you with all of our hearts, from the 25,000 fans in attendance at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida. He deserved that pop when he walked down the ramp to his music. But considering they have two more SmackDowns to do, and they're only going to make him more psychotic because they don't only have one way to turn things up, he's going to get fucking booed out of the building. Remember, in my fantasy booking for Edge versus McIntyre, he enters the match as a super babyface and turns heel on Drew during the match. Cheating to win, gets booed out of the building at the end. He gets best of both worlds. He deserved one big time pop from the fans walking into Mania as the challenger. At the same time, in this scenario, he gets to be champion, because there's no fucking way they're doing this other than for any reason other than, now Edge gets to pin Daniel Bryan and become champion. Because we're never going to have Edge pin Roman Reigns. That's crazy talk. So we have to have him, if we're going to have him be champion, which we want to do, we want to do it because Edge is also part of the creative team, apparently. He's making a lot of... It was Edge who was, pushed for himself to win the Royal Rumble. So I'm assuming he's pushing for himself to become champion. Him pinning Daniel Bryan to become champion, I'm cool with that. I think we're all kind of, we all kind of know the match is going to be super compelling. It's just like, how are they going to get to the kind of obvious finish? Is what we're going to come to. But I love the build, the character arc for Edge winning the Rumble, coming in, like coming back at the Rumble last year, the shot she had to go through with Orton, and now, being winning the Rumble this year, coming in number one, outlasting everybody, you know, picking Roman, you know, to have that particular thing to come back and do that, and that all be set, and then Daniel Bryan coming in, being like the lovable underdog that everybody, that Edge kind of never got a chance to be, because true Edge is a little half, his little his wires are a little crossed. He never got found a way to really connect with the fans in that way. And so he kind of was always, I mean, this is me interpreting, kind of as always, you know, resented Daniel Bryan for so easily getting over as an absolute true babyface. They love you. Why do they love you so much? Why do they love you so much? This, that doesn't, why? That could make somebody crazy. Also, I won the goddamn Royal Rumble. I get my one-on-one goddamn Mania match. What the fuck is going on? I have sacrificed too much coming back from 11 years off to come back and get this close to it and have it be the odds keep stacked against me. Somebody doesn't want me to be champion. He loses his mind a little bit. I mean, it's kind of almost there, all of it. And if you look at the lyrics of his fucking theme song, it is a absolute goddamn parable for his comeback. The fact that this song wasn't written now, but written years and years and years ago, doesn't make any sense. Like, obviously we all do this one, right? On this day, I see clearly everything has come to life. A bitter place and a broken dream, and I'll leave it all behind. Well, that's what happened when he left. His bitter place and a broken dream. He was really bitter about having to leave because he got injured, and that dream was broken, and he had to leave it all behind. But he says, on this day, it's so real to me. Everything has come to life. Another chance to chase a dream. He's been given another chance. After 11 years, he's been given another chance to chase the dream. Another chance to feel alive, because you know every one of these motherfuckers, the only time they feel alive is when they're getting their brains beat out in the middle of the ring for thousands of screaming fans. That's the only time they feel alive. If that wasn't the case, they wouldn't do this. It's a much a smaller scale. But there are times that I really, really miss performing in front of a live crowd. So I did that for a long, big, very big chunk of my adult life. Perform in front of a crowd. And there's nothing like that rush. There really isn't. That is the place where I know a lot of people, theater actors, and that is the only place where they can feel alive is on a stage. It's just chasing that high in between shows. So I get it. I understand it. And it makes you a little crazy. It's all very good. This is all very good. I'm here for this rebirth of Edge as fucking Psycho Edge. Like, I'm here for it. Yeah, this is going to be all very, very interesting to me before we go from here. So that was SmackDown. Let's yell about some of these. For those of you who don't know, WWE Cock, which is what I'm going to be calling the Peacock, WWE Network from now on. WWE Cock, otherwise known as the Cock, They did a thing, a documentary series, where they named the 50 greatest women in WWE of the last 28 years, because it starts in 1983. That's the modern era. So it's only women who've wrestled since then, because, well, they didn't let women wrestle pretty much before then. So, so this is just WWE. And we're going to breeze through some of this because, honestly, guys, I don't remember some of these women, because I wasn't watching wrestling religiously for some of those years. 93 to 2021 is a pretty long time. So let's get mad. Number 50, Toni Storm. Well, okay, it's cool that she's on this list, I guess. I mean, she's still got a pretty long career ahead of her. I'm trying to look at the list and remembering who, like, think of who they left off. There are probably some current NXT women that might feel bad about being left off in favor of her, but okay, you know, like, sure. Inaugural, she won a Mae Young Classic, right? And she was an NXT UK champion, sure. 49, Caitlin. I don't recall enough of her thing to be like, okay, but there are a lot of women from an era where I'm like, but that wasn't really wrestling, guys. I mean, I know, like, WWE superstars, so we're just gonna like just let it go. Okay, but like, all right. 48, Kaylee Ray, who was like held the NXT UK championship, women's championship for like, I don't know, 700 days. A long fucking time. You could say she could probably be higher than this. 47, Sonya Deville. Well, certainly she's definitely like got it. We'll see where her career goes from here. But she should be near the top of this list. If you do it in another 5 to 10 years, she should be near the top. She's so great. Shotzi Blackheart at 46, like ahead of Kaylee Ray, who's been the NXT UK champ forever. And Shotzi she's the current women's NXT champion. Okay, fine, I suppose. I mean, again, ahead of Kaylee Ray. All right. 45, Kelly Kelly, fuck you. Fuck you. Kelly Kelly, fuck you. Fuck you. Kelly Kelly, Kelly Kelly. Two Kellys, Kelly and Kelly, fuck you and fuck you. She shouldn't be anywhere near this fucking list. Kelly Kelly. 44, Candice LeRae. If Kelly Kelly was above Candice LeRae, I'd commit murder. I don't know who, but somebody. I'd have to kill somebody. I'd be so angry. Kelly Kelly ahead of Shotzi Blackheart, who was Baden almost. Kelly Kelly against Kelly Kelly. Kelly Kelly Kelly! 44 is Candice LeRae. 43, Nikki Cross. Okay, good for Nikki for being on this list. But I think Kaylee Ray has some quibbles. She's been champion at NXT UK for fucking ever. I mean, like, again, I know it's NXT UK, but, like, she doesn't lose matches. She beat Mako Satomura. Right? Nikki Cross. 42, Layla. I'm sorry, I did not watch a lot of wrestling during the Layla era. There's a few women I'm going to say that about. I'm sorry. 41, Ember Moon. Okay. Fine. 41 seems right. We'll have to wait, I suppose, to see if it's a relative position. Like, 41 seems about right for Ember Moon, but I guess you're going to have to compare it to certain people who are ahead of her in these rankings to see, you know, how offended we should be by that. So let's keep going. We'll see if there's anybody in the very near future on this list when you compare them to Ember Moon, makes me want to fucking vomit in my fucking mouth. Let's find out. Eve Torres, number 40. That seems fine to me. Let's see. I'm not really sure. I'm not really that familiar with Eve Torres, but I've heard a lot of very good things. Seems to be right around the same place. 40, 41. Okay. Oh, here we go. Let's find out. Is there somebody at 39 that when I compare her being included at 39 over Ember Moon at 41, over Nikki Cross at 43, over Candice LeRae at 44, over Shotzi Blackheart at 46, over Sonya Deville at 47, over Kaylee Ray at 48, and over Toni Storm at 50. These are just the women who I am currently watching now and know about their actual in-ring ability and their potential for future championships. Is there somebody at 39 when compared to all those women that might want me make me fucking vomit in my mouth? Let's find out. Number 39, Lacey Evans. What? Tell me what? What exactly has Lacey Evans won? What? When? What and when has she won anything? How? When? How? Why? What possible justification could you have for including Lacey Evans on this list at all? At 39, ahead of Ember Moon, you motherfuckers. What has Lacey Evans done to be included on this list at all? I believe that is the angriest I'm going to be on this list. But there might be hope. Seriously, I'm going to need somebody to fucking explain this to me. If this is like about accomplishments in any way, what the fuck has she fucking accomplished? She can wear a hat. Is it because of how good she wears hats? 38, Jazz. 37, Maryse. 36, Nia Jax. Okay, whatever. Fuck it. I don't fucking care. 35, Bianca Belair. Well, again, she hasn't won anything else yet either, so I suppose I'm not allowed to be angry about Lacey Evans and yet okay with Bianca Belair. But then again, she did win a Royal Rumble, which is one more fucking Royal Rumble than fucking Lacey Evans has won. Number 34, Carmella. I'm fine with Carmella being at this level. She's a two-time former champion. Fine. 33, Gail Kim. I could actually argue she should be higher, considering like what she's done elsewhere, coupled with this. But I know this is only WWE. 32, Jacqueline. She should probably be higher, considering I believe she is a Hall of Famer. 31, Kairi Sane. Yes, absolutely. It's around the right spot. 30, Naomi. Yes, okay, good. I'm not going to quibble with the Kairi Sane versus Naomi. Okay, whatever. Number 29, Bull Nakano. Like, I think she could be higher, too. 28, Ivory. Yes. Okay. 27, Melina. All right. 26, the Bella Twins. Is that like 26 is a tie? Is 26 a tie? The Bella Twins, like, come on, people. We got to be honest here. If you're doing a list and you're not allowed to make them at the same, is this just because it would feel really weird if like Brie was like at 40 and Nikki was like at 20? Is that, I mean, like, I would think that'd be too high for Nikki, but that's how far apart they should be. But okay. The Bella Twins at 26. The Bella Twins at 26. Like, they're not one act, though they were booked as such for a while. Like, one of them is markedly better than the other. 25, Io Shirai is far too low. Far too low on this list. Like, number 24 is Luna Vachon. I suppose. But, like, Io Shirai. Like, this is where, like, we start going back far enough where you're like, there's no way these women from 25 years ago could even hold a candle in the ring to some women who are doing stuff now. They just couldn't. Not that they weren't allowed to. They weren't able to. They didn't... They weren't being taught how to do this stuff. 23 is Stephanie McMahon. And, like, this isn't about in-ring work at all now. 23 is Stephanie McMahon. There are 27 women on this list who are worse than Stephanie McMahon. That's what we're fucking doing now? I mean, she is the most important. She single-handedly started a women's revolution, guys. It was all about Stephanie McMahon. Without her, women wouldn't be allowed to be on TV. She had to go to, like, daddy, please put the women on TV.
I don't want to put women on TV.
Daddy, please.
Okay, for you, pumpkin.
Is that what happened? If so, thanks, Steph. Thanks for being the reason why we get to watch women on TV in WWE, Steph. 22, Michelle McCool, fine. 21, Rhea Ripley. Okay, now, I love Rhea. What are your criterias? She won the NXT Women's Championship, and she held it for like a month and a half. Right? No. She held it for longer than that, because she... My fault. She defended it in February, but she won it before then. So what, three or four months? And then you booked her to lose it like you're fucking assholes. I love Rhea. We'll see where all this goes. But I love Rhea. 20 is Natalia. Well, Natalia, like, she's had so many matches, and she probably at some point earlier in her career should have had more title runs. Now I think she's done. I think she's passed her usefulness as a champion, but can certainly help to get up over other people. But probably should have been tapped to do more stuff when she was younger, because she is a consummate professional wrestler. So yeah. 19, AJ Lee. Sure. 18, Shayna Baszler. I might argue could be higher, but okay. 17, Paige. Like, we'll never know. Her career completely cut so short. 17 might be high, considering we'll never really know. She's still so young. She could have had so much more of a career ahead of her. 17 might be too high, considering how little she actually was able to wrestle. 16, Sable. Like, this is where you get Sable. Like, I don't remember Sable wrestling. I was young. I remember boobs. I remember puppies, because that's what she was presented as. She was presented as a means of conveyance for boobs. Boobs. We have to get boobs in the ring. How will we get the boobs in the ring? Let's put the boobs on this woman, and we'll have the woman walk to the ring carrying the boobs with her. That was how women were portrayed at the time in WWE. So forgive me if my teenage self wasn't tricked by Jerry Lawler and Vince McMahon into thinking that Sable was simply a means of conveyance for boobs. Molly Holly could probably be higher, honestly. It's hard to do. Now you're getting the nitty gritty. I don't know who you move down. Well, I do. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. 15, Molly Holly. 14, Victoria. Sure. 13, Alexa Bliss. Yes. I think that's probably right the right spot for Alexa Bliss. 12, Mickie James. Yes. 11, Beth Phoenix. Could be higher. Now we get into the top 10. Bailey at number 10. Bailey at number 10 is fucking psychotic. I'm this isn't I know it's going to seem like it. This isn't recency bias, guys. The four horsewomen are the top four. They just are. They're the most important. Without them, women's wrestling in WWE certainly isn't anything. They made it. They kicked down the fucking door. I think if Paige had stayed healthy, she'd be right up there with them. But that's it. And I'm sorry, I'm going to piss off a few people, I suppose. But those are the top four. In whatever order you want to put them in. But those are the top four. Having Bayley at 10 is fucking disrespectful as fuck. She was one half of the greatest women's wrestling match of all time. And it was, and I don't care what anybody says about anything else. Bayley versus Sasha at TakeOver Brooklyn was the greatest women's wrestling match of all time. She's one half of it. She's number 10. There are not nine better women in WWE than her. In history, no. Certainly not number nine, Ronda Rousey. Get the fuck out of here, Ronda Rousey. Get the fuck out of here with Ronda Rousey. She was in WWE for what? Less than a year? Get the fuck out of here with Ronda Rousey. No. No, I'm sorry. On the list, absolutely. I'll even give you somewhere in the 20s. Number nine in the top 10? Ronda Rousey, are you fucking kidding me? Like, if she had come in, done that year that she did, and stuck around and was still here, sure, I could see if she was still continuing her streak of dominance that had started years ago and then stopped. But if she was still doing it now, okay, fine. But that was it. That was all she gave us. That was a shooting star across the night sky and then nothing. No. No, Ronda Rousey. No, sorry. No. Eight is Lita. Lita has a special place in my heart because I was a Hardy Boys guy back in like 2000, 2001. So she's got a special place for me. But I think the back end of the top 10 is probably where she belongs. Alundra Blaze, you're only getting this because you're one of the top, when you're one of the first. The inaugural women's champion in WWE, basically, right? These women could wrestle fucking circles around you. They just could. It's like this is a legacy pick. This is a very important to be here pick. And sure, fine, but not above Bayley. Uh-uh. No way is Alundra Blaze above Bayley. Sasha Banks at 6 is too low. I know I rag on her and her promo style, but it works for her. She's also the absolute very best of the best in the ring. From a technical standpoint and what the shit she can do as so small as she is to tell a story. God damn it. She's so fucking compelling. 5, Asuka. And Asuka above any of the horsewomen is a shock to me. But I do love Asuka. They only let her be champ when one of the other horsewomen is busy. That's what happens with Asuka. They wanted so badly. Rhea Ripley comes out on Monday Night Raw a couple days ago. She says, I want a title match with you, Asuka, because Charlotte is sick. Charlotte has COVID, so we don't know if she's going to be available for Mania or not or whatever. So I want you, says Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley versus Asuka one-on-one at Mania was plan C. Plan B was Asuka versus Charlotte. Plan A at Mania was Charlotte versus Lacey Evans at Mania, because Lacey Evans would have taken the belt off of Asuka at Elimination Chamber. That was a fucking thing they were going to do. Plan A was the racist caricature Lacey Evans beating Asuka for the women's title at Elimination Chamber, and then her teasing that she was fucking Ric Flair, going in as a heel into Mania and letting Charlotte be the conquering babyface to beat Lacey Evans for her 19th or whatever the fuck it is title reign at Mania was plan fucking A. And that doesn't show a lot of respect for Asuka now, does it? So putting her at 5 is kind of interesting. I think for me, my top 5 is the four horsewomen in any way you want to put them. And then 5 is Asuka. So Asuka is in the right spot. Number 4 is China. And China is a difficult one because she was treated as a sideshow for so long. She wrestled men, I feel like, more often than she wrestled women. And she was just there to be like a, oh my God, is that a man thing? Because it was the late 90s, people. That was people's immediate response to first seeing China was, oh my God, is that a man? Horribly, that was what she was put out there to be. She was put out there to get that reaction. So it's a weird thing. Trying to assess her place on this list. But there's no doubt that she was very important part of WWE history. I just don't think I would have her above any of the four horsewomen or Asuka. 3 is Becky Lynch. 2 is Charlotte Flair. I mean, Charlotte over Becky, of course, right? That's just perfectly placed. And the number 1 pick, I honestly feel, was a choice that they made so that no one super fandom of any of the current women could be pissed. They weren't be allowed to be pissed because Trish Stratus is number 1. Well, okay, well, Trish is number 1. Okay, fine. But haha, I'm a Charlotte fan, and we're number 2 over you, Becky Lynch fans. And Sasha Stan's gonna get to be super fucking pissed about them being number 6. And Bayley fans get to be depressed because Bayley is once again looked at as the stepchild of that family. Here's a hot take. Trish Stratus is horribly overrated. Like, she was pretty good for the time, but that ain't good. She was the best women's wrestler in one of the very best in the world, certainly in America at the time. But that's a very, very low bar. That's a very, very low bar. Is this like a make good? Sorry, Trish. Sorry about that whole dog collar bit. Sorry about how, like, again, you were a sex object who was occasionally allowed to wrestle later in your career. Like, you managed a team called TNA. T and A, that's Test and Albert, but it's also tits and ass, because that's how you were viewed by the person in charge of the company. You were viewed as tits and ass. And so you weren't probably allowed to do all the stuff that you could do as a wrestler at the time. And if such a time machine could exist to bring prime Trish Stratus to this particular era, she wouldn't get on TV in NXT. I'm sorry, she just wouldn't. Now she might have the opportunity to learn with all the tools that she has available to her now, where she's not being booked as literal tits and ass, where she doesn't have to go through that anymore, where she could actually go to a wrestling school and be taught amazing things. Maybe she could actually do all that stuff. And I guess if such a time machine were to exist, and then we brought Prime Trish Stratus back from what, 1999, and taught her to do all these amazing things that all the women at NXT can do now, that Bayley and Sasha and Becky and Charlotte can do now, maybe she'd make me eat my words, but there's no way Trish belongs on this list any higher than five. Not ahead of Charlotte and Becky and Sasha and Bayley. Sasha and Bayley and Becky and Charlotte, they made women's wrestling into what it is in WWE, certainly. This list wouldn't be a thing. This list would not exist. Nobody would think to do a top 50 women of WWE if it were not for Charlotte and Becky and Sasha and Bayley. They forced women's wrestling to be thought of as something different. And therefore, they need to be the top four on the list. That's me rating the Cox list of women. All right. That was Sour Grabs. This has been your host, Alec Pulaski. Mania is looking good. It's amazing to me. Like, the cards are pretty fucking stacked. We'll just have to hope that the booking doesn't fail us. Spoiler alert, the booking is absolutely going to fail us. And why? Because, as we say on the show, everything sucks.